Faith Action Network, just to say a little bit about myself, if you weren't here a couple days ago. I am Carol Jensen. I am the co-chair of Faith Action Network of Washington State. You can hear me, right?
I can hear you.
Yeah, you can hear me. Okay. And I don't know about if they're recording, but anyway, so Faith Action, and I'm a retired ELCA pastor, but still not retired from my advocacy and community involvement, and more involved than ever in that. So Faith Action Network, a little bit of history about it. Lutheran Public Policy Office of Washington State was in the first decade of the 2000s, really growing in its network and its outreach. It was starting to work ecumenically as well as just with Lutherans. And we were in conversations with the Washington Association of Churches, which, like many, I think probably in many parts of the country, statewide ecumenical agencies, sort of on the decline. And so they were sort of going down, and we were going up in terms of involvement. And since we were really interested as Lutherans in doing advocacy, at least ecumenically, we began to talk about also doing, that we really need to be doing an interfaith. And so out of that, Faith Action Network was born in 2011, and that our mission, and we haven't had a strategic planning process since we were formed, which we probably need to do, but this is what we've been since we started, interfaith statewide partnership, striving for a just, compassionate, sustainable world through community building, education, advocacy, and courageous public action. So and I would say of those that we do less on education, which it's not that we don't think education is important, but most of our programmatic work is really focused in what you'll hear more about this in the area of legislative advocacy, public policy advocacy, and public action, especially solidarity action with that is really interfaith and has been increasingly needed in these last couple years, as we know. There's been a lot of activity out in the street. So that's so this is, if you think of, in a way, the two arms of sort of our solidarity work and public witness, and then legislative advocacy, public policy advocacy. We'll talk about that. So this is really the solidarity part, and so we show up. And I don't know. Let me get an idea of what states are you? Where are you from? Let's starting
Washington.
Up here. Pardon?
Washington.
Okay, Washington State. And what city?
Bainbridge Island,
okay.
Portland, Oregon.
Okay.
Corvallis, Oregon.
All right.
Bainbridge Island.
And Minnesota.
Minneapolis. And San Diego area, California.
California, okay. Well, I'm sure that you all know this. I can't think of a time in recent decades where there has been more public witness and, you know, vigils, demonstrations, rallies, marches related to many of the challenges posed by this current administration. So this is just, you know, a few pictures of that we show up. I mean, Facebook is a tool that, you know, you can put together an event like that, and then it gets widely shared. I mean, we know how this sort of, Faith Action Network often doesn't organize the events themselves, but send speakers. The woman in the lower left-hand corner, that's our co-director. There's Amber. You can see Amber. Mm-hmm. Next to her is co-director fan Elise DeGoyer. And our ELCA Hunger Fellow, Sarah Botney, who that's a special program of the ELCA that has placed... they're sort of like, they're post-college interns with public policy offices. Have any of those of you had any of those? And has there been one in Minnesota? Or this is the second year of the program, and we didn't do it last year. But anyway, she's been with us, and it's sort of under our ELCA hunger at our advocacy dollar. So that's Sarah and Amber, our organizer. There's me up in the upper left-hand corner at a front of the county courthouse. I think that was the families belong together rallies that were across the country over a year ago now. That at the end of June of 2018. And the showing up. So it's at events that may be. Maybe secularly organized by unions or community groups. They may be things like when there's a vandalism of a mosque or shootings, like certainly after Tree of Life synagogue shooting, after the Christ Church shooting, to name two of the more recent examples. Massive coming together of people that to support the communities that are being threatened. And one of the things that social media enables us to do is to have really rapid response on those. So you know, we as Faith Action Network aren't necessarily, but it's not necessarily our staff that's organizing those events, but that we are getting out the word about those to our networks. And I don't know how it is, and I'm sure in California and but maybe in Minnesota too, that we end up having multiple events around the state. I mean, so more and more, it's not like you don't have to go to Seattle. I mean, even living in Everett, which is only 25 miles from Seattle, you know, we have our actions in Everett. And so
So the Faith Action Network, it's now kind of nationwide too?
Or no, it's statewide. That's statewide. Yeah, we are statewide.
Statewide, then there'd be some other groups in Oregon.
Right. Now, in Oregon, I'm pretty sure, I don't know if Oregon still has a Lutheran public policy office.
I'm not sure about that, and we can probably find out, but I know they do have some other groups under the ELCA, like Organizing for Mission. They have some kind of folks who are doing that, and that's kind of a organizing model that is kind of through the ELCA. And there's a lot of other just great groups that people of faith can kind of connect with. We'll talk a little bit about that too. It's a community effort. It takes everybody. It's people of faith working with nonprofits, working with unions. It's really all of us together, united around this shared vision of justice.
Yeah.
One of the things that's really active right now down in San Diego area is the Lutheran refugee effort.
I'm sure. And like what Amber said, the partnerships are so important. And one thing I've noticed locally, where I do a lot of my organizing in the city of Everett, which is like about 25 miles north of Seattle, is that, you know, faith communities are not now seen as really good partners among the sort of progressive secular left in a way that wasn't true, I think, like 5 or 6 years ago. And I think it's also because that's going to be different in different communities, but that's my local experience, that now, you know, if there's a secular rally, they look for a faith leader to, you know, come and be one of the speakers, which is a great opportunity for us because it is we, in a way, get to bring in the sort of moral values and that I think really enhance and strengthen the wider witness, which includes secular groups. And it's almost a kind of witnessing, really. I mean, you know, and I think as a pastor, you can, you know, even pastors do it, you can make that case. This is part of my evangelism. You know, this is like, I'm out there, you know. And I've certainly, I personally have had 12 interns when I was a pastor that served both the congregation I serve and the Faith Action Network, and before that was in public policy office. And one of those next week is coming, and he's now a bishop. Another one is down in L.A. and, you know, said, I learned from my supervisor pastor that a pastor's place is in City Hall, you know, and is in, you know, out on the streets. And so that's a neat way. So let's maybe time to go on to the next slide, you think?
Sure. So, because I am quiet. So we also speak up, and I put through education advocacy testifying as a few examples. So a big part of the Faith Action Network, as Carol mentioned, is our advocacy. I should introduce myself. So I'm Amber, I'm the organizer at FAN, or Faith Action Network, and we work statewide. I'm focusing right now in Pierce County and in South King County, so working with our faith communities in those two areas.
Where are they in relationship to?
To Seattle. So Pierce County is about my commute, about 40-ish, well, where I live it's about 40 miles, but maybe like 25
it's
miles.
The next county people. South of
yeah.
King
okay.
County.
It's
okay.
The next county, Seattle.
Yeah, and then South King County is just outside the city. So I'm focusing in those particular areas right now. But a big part of our work is really engaging in policy advocacy. Because we see as people of faith, as we've been learning all week, you know, that there are specific values from our traditions that we hold that are either being reflected in our policies or not being reflected in our policies. So we feel it's our responsibility as people of faith to really speak up on behalf of policies that are either helping our communities grow or speaking out against those that are really oppressing of communities and that are not good for our state. So these are a few examples. One thing that Faith Action Network does every year, so in Washington State, our legislature is part-time, so it starts in January and goes throughout April. But we hold an advocacy day in Olympia at our state capitol every year, where we bring people from around the state to gather, to connect with others in their districts or their local regions, and then to connect with their elected officials around the issues that we've been advocating for that year. So this is just like an example of our folks meeting with a representative, you know, talking about some of the bills that are moving and what is important for their community. This is our other co-director, Paul Bent. Some of you may know him, but he's testifying on behalf of a bill in front of a policy committee in Olympia. Another picture of our advocacy day where folks are gathered in the sanctuary at one of our faith partners. And then this is actually my church. The one in the corner, it says Take Five, and we're about 20 people. But we believe that it is our call to actually show up and to speak up on behalf of policy. So that's like my church mom leading our Take Five advocacy table. And I believe we were talking about the rent eviction at that point, and getting more folks involved around educating folks about what that was, but then also getting them to actually write some letters that we were going to send to our elected officials. So speaking up is very important for us, and we do that in mostly at our state policy level and also a little bit federally and sometimes locally as well. So I want to just kind of pose the question to you all. So why advocate? Like, why should people of faith speak up in the public sphere? Why do you think it's important?
Jesus did.
Jesus did. All right. Other thoughts?
It just seems morally right to speak up.
Yeah.
Yeah, the other thing I'd say, too, is that if we can't change it at the decision-making level, the rest of what we do is not going to be very valuable.
Yeah.
Oh, for our kids and our grandkids,
yeah.
You know, just wanting to leave a world. And
if we don't speak up, somebody else will.
Yep. Exactly. Very much so. Very, very much so.
I really have that issue of, you know, the word evangelical and just like wanting to show people that there's a broader meaning to it or, you know, too, because in my mind, it gets so misrepresented in so much of the news.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. I also think it just shows that people of faith care about policy and advocacy and how systems at a larger level are impacting our communities. I mean, a lot of us, you know, do a lot of like the direct service work, which is very important. I mean, people are hungry right now, but we're also starting to ask the question, why are people hungry to begin with in a country of so much wealth? And so looking at those policies that are in place that are actually either there to kind of lift people out of those situations or ones that we really need to change because they aren't helping our communities. And so when people of faith are really speaking up, I love that we're coming in with an agenda from our value standpoint. We're not in as like lobbyists, we're in just because we care. And these are values that are reflective in our faith traditions. And I think that that sends a really strong message, especially interfaith work where, you know, different traditions are coming together around shared values and saying, you know, we're going to stand together. We come from different places, but we all care about this issue, and we are going to stand together and talk to you about this, to our elected officials.
And I think it's important. I've heard Paul Benz, the co-director, do a lot of presentations over the years, and talking about, you know, when I talked about two arms of FAN, it's sort of solidarity work and public policy advocacy. As local faith communities, I mean, the hand of service and charity and the hand of, you know, working for justice and that you can't, I mean, you know, you probably know these stories, but a classic one that's told is, you know, the story about, you know, pulling people out of the river. You know, there's, you know, you're downstream, and every day you find, you know, a body in the river or somebody that needs saving, you know, out of the river. And then finally, so, well, why are these, bodies ending up, these people ending up in the river? Well, you have to go upstream and see why is it, you know? And I think people, you know, when we get to some of the later on, the barriers question, that I think we have a number, those of us in faith communities have a lot of good-hearted people in our congregations that really care that people have food on the table, that, you know, children can go to school with, you know, food for the weekend in those backpacks, but then to make that connection, you know, why are people hungry? And that's that's the path from sort of our compassion. Compassion leads us to policy, and I think that's the path for a lot of people. I mean, some of us are just wonky and we love policy, but like I think for a lot of people, it's just like they care about people, and so okay, if we care about people, then you know, if we help the food bank at our church, you know, how you know, why is it that people don't have enough food, and how does that relate to what happens in Olympia or in Washington D.C.?
Another question: how my geography here is terrible. What? How far is Olympia from the major centers, population centers?
Olympia is 65 miles south of Seattle.
And Olympia is the capital.
Capital, yeah. Olympia is our capital. Yeah,
65 miles, so it's at least an hour trip.
Yeah, and then you have to go through Tacoma, which has always got a lot of choices, and Spanaway, where Amber lives. But yeah, it's Well, and we're going to get to, you know, we are not year-round legislature, so that's so many opportunities to meet with legislators in your own community, which is really, you know, an important thing. So, one of the questions, I think, for faith-based organizations like FAN, when we were starting, is... You can go to a training about organizing, or you can read books about community organizing, that you really need to focus on like a really limited number of issues, like maybe one issue, and then have a victory related to that. And over the years, we've sometimes had discussion at FAN. You know, people will say, "Gosh, we have way too many issues." And we do, but the how the discussion has ended up, and we really haven't had this discussion for probably 3 or 4 years. We sort of, I think, sort of said, "Well, this is who we are," is that as people of faith, the fact is we're called to expressing our love for neighbor related to just a whole. There's so many policies that are harming our neighbor. You know, whether you can think related to healthcare, education, you know, immigration, all the range of things that we really are called to speak out and to act related to a whole host of those and to all of them really. So what we do is we try to be strategic, but we every year we have a legislative agenda, and we have what we call them buckets. And these are our four, and advocating for a biennial budget that protects the poor and vulnerable, promoting environmental justice, restoring justice in our criminal justice system, and funding housing for all. We actually have a couple more buckets that we don't have up there. But these tend to be the same from year to year, although our process and then what we do is we put specific pieces of legislation into each of those buckets each year. So the way we do that is after our legislative session, in June, late May, June, we have, as Faith Action Network in our state, we have four what we call summits in different parts of the state, and usually two on the east side and two on the west side of the state. And then at those summits, the people that come from the different congregations that are part of Faith Action Network, we have about 150 right now, congregations, mosques, synagogues that are officially related to Faith Action Network. And they will send representatives to those summits, and they will hear a report on what are the, you know, the victories of the last legislative session, or the progress, and what are we looking at? What's bubbling up? What should we be working on in the coming year? And usually we'll have tables that people will sit at that are related to these buckets, and then people say, well, you know, this bill failed last session, but we need to be working on it again next session. Or, there's been this rollback by the Trump administration, so we need to be working on this related to, at a state level. Mostly we're focused at a state level. So we have those summits, and then we'll often meet with legislators. Like during August, September, we will often I can't remember if this is part of what I'm talking about, but anyway, and then by about November, we're starting because there's a lot of work that happens between the sessions. We're starting to get closer to what are the actual bills that are going to come up in January that are going to be introduced. And FAN, rarely is lead on more than, a couple bills, but we work in partnership with a lot of other organizations. We work in coalition. And so in the context of those coalitions, for example, there's a really strong one related to environmental issues in the state. I forget what the name of it is, but that coalition will, be working in the late fall, November, December, to identify what are our top three environmental issues for this this coming session. So then FAN will, we will approve our legislative agenda in part out of, what our people care most about, our constituents and FAN, what our partners are prioritizing, and what bills are going to be coming up in the legislative session. So that's how we get to an agenda that then And then once the legislative session starts, and of course we have, this is actually the successes for our last year. You can see the agenda is over there, but this sheet would be is longer actually than the agenda will be posted on our website by the 1st of January. You'll see what are the bills that we're going to be or early. The session starts usually the second Tuesday, something like that. And then every week we have Our co-director, Paul Vance, is down in Olympia like 3 days a week. We have a volunteer lobbyist as well. And people go down, like Amber, you testified one time, or you were?
I was there.
You were there. Okay, but we have, I mean, I know like Rabbi Johanna, who's presented here, she has given testimony. You saw the picture of Paul giving testimony. So we have people actually that are going around and doing what you call lobbying. But then the other big piece is getting, and we'll be coming to this in a minute, getting individual advocates and the congregations that are part of our network to be advocating related to our, you know, to our legislative agenda. So there are weekly, you know, email alerts that give people on our list sort of their marching orders for the week or the coming week, and usually those in fact come out late in the week, and so it tells you what's coming up next week, what hearings and so forth. So that's sort of some of the nuts and bolts. And this, and just jump in, Amber, if I'm leaving something out or if I'm saying too much, but this is our successes, and partly because we in Washington State have, we're not partisan as Faith Action Network, but the reality is that in our state legislature at the current point, the fact that both chambers are controlled by Democrats and also are, you know, the governor's Democrat, that the logjam of legislation from the 5 or 6 years that was a divided house just broke. And it broke partly, I mean, one of the cool stories is, the D's picked up, in a special election in 2017, they picked up one seat that flipped it because somebody left, I can't remember the reasons, but that person won in part. I mean, Faith Action Network congregation was part of having a candidate forum in that district. Monk Adingra, who's a Sikh, Indian Sikh background, was elected. So in 2018, in fact, that logjam started to break and a number of things were passed. And then 2019, I mean, I looked at our legislative victories from 5 years ago and they were on one side of one 8.5 by 11 page without not even going to the bottom. Now we have this many.
Big paper.
And believe me, that is something to stand up on the mountain and cheer about, because, I mean, I'm just getting going on this, but, you know, part of our empowerment as advocates we need to see these victories and then to know this makes a difference in the lives of people. We see, I mean, the people that come into our aid bank at church and stuff, this makes a difference in their lives. And so, hallelujah, you know, and for people that think that advocacy isn't important, I'm preaching here, but, we can never get anything done. Well, hey, you know, hard political work here, but it's really phenomenal. And so that's, I think, probably enough for it. And then that's our cycle of how we each year move on the legislative agenda. So I'm going to turn it over to Amber.
Awesome. So how your congregation can participate in advocacy. So as we kind of talked about, people of faith have been really leading and have been really grappling with like the power that they hold to actually change public policy. So these are a couple examples, and I'll kind of highlight a few that you can take back with you in your individual congregations and kind of put some of this work into practice. So host a letter writing party. So a lot of congregations, they will have like postcards around a particular issue or bill to kind of educate their congregation about what those issues are, but then also having folks write about why it's important to them. We're actually going to have some practice later. And then we are able to either deliver it to Olympia. It's fun when people actually get to bring their postcards down and actually, you know, hand them to, like, from their congregation, like, to their state elected officials. We also Carol talked about holding candidate forums. Faith communities can do this. These are opportunities for the community to learn about what the candidates' positions are. It's nonpartisan, so all the candidates are invited, and we've held several across the state, and it's had big impacts because people are able to hear what different folks stand on hunger, on housing, on criminal justice, and then make a decision on how they want to use their voice in terms of the election. And it's really great when faith communities can participate in that. We've oftentimes host them at faith communities. So it's also, again, bringing people of faith into the space, but also it opens up to the community to see that people of faith care about these issues as well. Take by table, so this is another kind of way to educate folks in your community about different kind of legislation that is moving through Olympia or wherever your state capital is. Usually folks will take like one issue, and it's the whole idea is 5 minutes for advocacy. So it's something very fast. They might have a couple like one-pager handouts that explain the issue, some postcards, someone there to kind of help explain it. It's just a really easy way to get people in the practice of connecting with their elected officials around public policy.
And doing that like at coffee hour. That's a common thing, you know, because people have their coffee hour at their table, so you just have the pencils, the postcards and stuff right on the coffee hour table, little handout, like I said.
Absolutely.
You can get maybe, you know, 40 cards in a Sunday.
Yeah, and sometimes initiatives are, again, are a big thing in Washington, so folks will have like the initiatives, and big communities can also take a position on an initiative because we can take positions on issues. So we'll sometimes have initiatives out for folks to sign. Attend various coalition meetings. So, you know, again, Carol mentioned we worked with a lot of different partners and a lot of different groups. And we've had some of our advocates kind of show up in those spaces as fan representatives in a way to kind of bring back that information for us. And it really helps build our capacity, and they're passionate about the issue. And so that's another way for folks to get involved. Educational forums, you know, we have folks who've showed movies, had guest speakers. I've done an advocacy 101 training, so just how does the legislature work? A lot of folks can get stuck with, I don't understand this process. And so we're, you know, willing to kind of do that, learn it, and then share that with individuals so that they have an idea of kind of how to follow a bill through the process. Interim meetings, these are very important. And as Carol mentioned, we have a part-time legislature. So, but that doesn't mean we stop advocating when the legislature is not in session. We are doing that year-round. So this is actually a really great time. I love the interim time because we actually get longer with our elected officials. When they're in Olympia, they're running to meeting or in committee. And when you have time in the interim, you actually can actually talk about some of the priorities and the things that you care about. And you have a little bit more time with them to kind of strategize and discuss about their recent positions from the past session or what they're planning to do moving forward. And so that's a really good opportunity. Fan sets a lot of those up for the folks who we work with, but I'm sure there are definitely organizations in other parts of the country that can also help with that as well. And it makes it easier because you're not in Olympia, you don't have to do that commuting. They're oftentimes in your local community, sometimes out of faith community, coffee shop, wherever. So Advocacy Day is probably one of our biggest days, and it's a lot of fun. So this is happening during the legislative session, and you know, we gather, it's everybody from around the state coming to Olympia to meet with their elected officials. We do workshops. Folks get to actually connect with others in their district as they're planning kind of what they would like to talk to their elected officials on.
So is that a day set by the legislature?
It's a day set by like FAN or our organization.
So it's kind of by subject.
Yeah, and okay. A lot of nonprofits will have them. So there's like Hunger Advocacy Day, Housing Advocacy Day, ours is called Interfaith Advocacy Day, and organizations will set them up throughout the session.
You can usually find 2, 3, 4, 5 of them meeting at the same time, and sometimes we've got people who are interested in a particular issue as well as our state organization, and they're running from one place to another.
Yeah. Okay. So there's definitely that, but there's also, it's an opportunity. A lot of people don't get to go to Olympia, so it's also kind of just a unique experience to feel what that's like, and it's been really empowering for folks to, you know, plan together and really recognize their power and their voice and that it matters and that you're talking to someone who's representing you. And so you're sharing with them that, you know, this is what I care about and this is what your community cares about.
And we, you know, sometimes we'll have, you know, now we've been doing scarves. We will wear a, you know, we'll all wear a thing that identifies us or, you know, and so you're walking around and there's hundreds of you, you know, and you feel like powerful, you know.
So we wear with our scarves. Scarves and like, that's just a full room of folks and, and ours is kind of neat because we have people from different faith traditions talk about why they advocate to kind of center us as we go into the day. And then we also definitely lean on our partners. So we do workshops and, so we'll have someone from like the Housing Alliance come and talk about some of our housing bills and someone from the Budget and Policy Center talk about some of our economic justice bills. So it's definitely like this effort, communal effort, it's been a lot of fun. So
I'd also like to bring up one other thing that I'm a very big proponent of note dropping. We talked about that the other day when I was working in the Illinois State Legislature in Springfield in early childhood education. We were known as the note droppers, and we used little note, you know, any kind of note card that thanked people for voting for what it was or speaking out on something. And those little things, so we're going to make some that are our church, Our Saviors in Minneapolis, and also say a member of Isaiah. But those we've decided to do postcards instead so that we can put a stamp on it, mail it, or it can just be dropped off. And the reaction when I dropped off a business card to our rep that just said, thanks for your hard work on this, she stood there and looked at it and said, look what she just brought to me. And so this little silly thing that didn't seem that much to me meant a great deal to her.
Yeah.
Don't underestimate the power of that. Thank you.
And it's also an example of relationship building. So
yes.
These are relationships that, you know, we're trying to foster. So, staying connected, whether it's just a thank you email or, you know, hey, like, I saw that you voted on this, I appreciate it. It's important that they're constantly hearing from you. My church mom, she's like, sends emails quite often. And she's been invited to, like, some of, you know, her elected officials kind of, like, information sessions because she's just very connected and constantly checking in. Let's see. And so, you know, a big part of this week is Interfaith Week. So, you know, we also want to talk about, we can do this in partnerships with other faith communities. And so we have these 2 points, get to know other local faith communities and connect with other faith communities and community partners around shared policy issues. When you're first kind of starting to do this work, trying to reach out, I've seen potlucks be really successful. Also, oftentimes, faith communities will hold different events that they're working on, and they usually open it to the public. So, you know, attending an event and just, you know, checking in and seeing, you know, learning about the faith communities in your local area can be really great opportunities.
Just to say about, you know, one of the, you know, questions you just need to ask yourself is, who else is working on this? I mean, you know, that's just the basic. When you're sitting in your congregation and you're with your social ministry or social justice committee, you know, and finding that out, if you don't know, then you got to find out. So, you know, you got to have those relationships and you work on building those because that's what starts really creating some power.
And capacity, you know, so we're not having to do everything by ourselves. And then be creative. The possibilities are endless, and I put almost just because with faith communities, we do have some restrictions. We can't be partisan. We can't, like, endorse candidates. But there is a lot we can do around issues, around education and informing our communities about, you know, what the issues are and what's moving. So there's a lot of great opportunities.
You're saying you can't endorse candidates?
So FAN can't because we're a 501c3.
Oh, you're a 3.
Yeah. Okay.
We have a 4 as part of ours, and we did endorse. And we endorsed the governor and lieutenant governor who were elected, and we endorsed many representatives who were elected. We're going to do the same thing in the Senate this next round.
Wow. Who do you mean by we?
We is called Isaiah,
right,
in Minnesota. And Isaiah is interfaith. It's we partner with the Jewish organization, but the Muslim, there's a Muslim coalition, there's a Latino coalition, there's a barbershop coalition. Here's an interesting way to get to the African-American community. All these barbershops have banded together. This is where things happen.
Cool.
In the Black community. It's very, very cool. And there's one person who's taken a leadership role there. And barbershop coalition. It's very, very cool.
Yeah.
And then there's an early childhood coalition, particularly around some issues where they said the Somali child care centers were taking money and sending it to Somalia to fund terrorism, which was and then of course they said on Fox News that really wasn't the truth. Sort of.
Can you say some more about? I mean, how did Isaiah? I mean, I think we have enough time to how did it get formed?
Under the umbrella of Isaiah.
Isaiah is an organization that started. It's been going on for a long time, and it's very often names of Old Testament characters. Gamaliel was who Obama was with in Chicago, and I have a history there too. But it started out really quite militant. It has now become more, I would say, palatable to people where they feel like they can buy in. It started, and it's really very much grassroots. It is intended to start with one-on-one conversations. We have one-on-one trainings all the time so that we're talking to each other. And then we have house meetings where we sit and we bubble up ideas. We cull those ideas together. We look at where things need to be done in the state. We've got groups all over the state of Minnesota, so we have organizers who are doing outline work.
So maybe it came out of IAF then. Did it come out of, was it one of the, I mean, because the one-on-ones, and so it came out of a community organizing model.
It came out of the community organizing model, very clearly. Yes. And it's getting stronger and stronger. I think we have about 150
people pay to be
congregations.
Part of it?
Your faith-based organization joins, and then. But there are people that are working, for instance, there are people from a church here in St. Paul, where there's a woman I know that I was sitting with in a hearing, and she's trying to lead her church into it, but she's still participating, so individuals can participate too. Mm-hmm. It's really pretty amazing to see what we were able to accomplish. I haven't seen something that looked like this, but I think if we have it, if it's there, they need to make it better known. If not, we need to do it. Yeah.
Cards, which are also
The little cards.
Yeah.
Yeah. We came up with 7 different principles and things that we were doing under it, and it was a series of little cards, and you could tear off one and give it to someone, or you could give your legislator the whole set that said these are the things we're working on. And the governor and lieutenant governor, she worked for Children's Defense Fund in Minneapolis. They were behind us all the time. I mean, they were standing next to us. So if there's a conversation, we're at the point where Isaiah is invited to the table in Minnesota. It's I get chills thinking about it, but it's very powerful. And the Somali community, which is so strong in Minnesota, has become very actively involved in it. And we do things like, there's a mosque down the street from us in a Somali mall. And after what happened in Christchurch and then during Ramadan, we were down there every Friday, a group of us just greeting people as they were coming for prayer on Friday. And some of these little connections, and people said, you have no idea how much this means to us.
Yes. You read about that in San Diego. I'm not kidding.
Really?
I don't know if it's your church specifically, but there was the idea of here are these people supporting.
Yes.
We did read about it.
Yes. So. And this is a retired pastor who's a friend of mine, and we live in the same building now. But just, you know, a group of us would just get together at church, and we'd walk down the street. Hodan Hassan, our representative, lives right across the street in a building. So she was overwhelmed in her first year because she was also elected assistant majority leader. So it's just an amazing place to be. We had an in-district after the legislative session, where we invited our senator and Hodan as well. And while they are people who are of similar mind, we were emphasizing some of the things. I spoke about childcare, saying, I hate to tell you, I'm telling you the same things I was telling people 40 years ago in Illinois. Mm. And it's still not happening yet. Yeah. And then there was a Somali childcare provider who talked with me and talked about the Islamophobia and some of the things that were happening. Mm. But they came to us, and it was a Catholic community, our Lutheran church, and a mosque, who all did this together at the mosque. And
quick question. So the difference between the 503
yep.
And yours is
one allows you for the 501c4, and many 501c3s will have a 501c4. Yep. Because if you are doing active endorsement and lobbying, you have to separate that out in some way so that...
And that's kind of the main difference.
That's a national...
And Faith Action Network has to... we have to do reporting. We have to keep track of how many hours of, of lobbying.
Oh, okay.
And we have to, keep it under a certain amount, and we have to... And because we actually get... we just recently had where there's something called the Freedom Foundation. I mean, we got a number of groups like Faith Action Network got, reported to the state government as, exceeding, we hadn't correctly reported or something. And we do that. We have to watch that. So we have not yet formed a C4, but it's it's been a topic we've considered. But we feel we can sort of do a certain amount of lobbying, and then we don't have to measure what our individual advocates do out there in the volunteer network. We've been talking, Terry. Just so we've been hearing a bit about Isaiah in Minneapolis and the work that they've done. But I think one of the exciting things what you're sharing, Cynthia, is that the power released when these relationships get built. I mean, just thinking of the Somali community. I mean, now we've got Ilhan Omar in Congress even if we stay with Faith Action Network, not getting into partisan politics, clearly the relationships, the Muslim Association of Puget Sound, which you heard from Imam Jamal, I mean, they're deeply involved in political work and through the Faith and Action Network, but also sort of independently. And I think Christian communities too, sort of having their back in the sense that when you're under threat, we're all under threat, and then we're with you. And she shared how they would go down after Christchurch to the mosque and stand there and stuff. Ends up translating into real political power too, even if we're not a partisan organization as such, because it's those. Those relationships release, I think, they help people, especially marginalized communities. That's partly the whole role of, what do our white churches do? Well, we stand with those people, and then that enables them to also, feel more safe to express their political voice and courageous, because we know there. I mean, we know that. It's dangerous now. I mean, it's got to be dangerous. So
one of my most amazing experiences was going to caucus, and I'd gone the year before, and it was ordained white people that were running my particular caucus. And the caucus system was where you get together and you elect people to go to the next steps and eventually to the state convention that endorses the candidates. And this last year, the energy was so strong, it just absolutely, it almost fell apart. Well, it did fall apart. because the Somali groups were so excited, but they were supporting three different Somali candidates. And they're so excited to have this ability to be able to have a say in their government. And I thought, where are the rest of the people that look like me that live in this district? Because this, I mean, these people were so excited about it. And I remember the year before, there were women that were brought in, and they made an X, and somebody wrote in the information. And when they got the ballot, they were saying, Hillary, 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 Hillary. And I said, you want to vote for Hillary. And this was just in a testing the waters to see. But these women were so thrilled to be able to vote, period, and to vote for a woman. Mm-hmm. We put the union bug. We make sure that our things are printed by the union, so we're making that connection, because a lot of the things that we believe in are union-friendly, too, so that we're making those kinds of coalitions. I worked for the teachers' union and called for 2 months because only one-third of the teachers had voted in the last midterm election in Minnesota. Oh,
really?
And so, yeah, I mean, it was, well, they didn't think it was that important.
Okay. So, you know, so when this, the Christchurch shooting happened, which was in part inspired by Dylann Roof, mm-hmm. you know, so we had 2,000 people show up with maps. You know, and so, but 4 years ago, that wouldn't have happened.
Right.
And that's because MAPS began to actively, I mean, actually they had been for a long time, but stepped up their active engagement with their neighbors, with other coalitions of people. Mm-hmm. Working to help support other human rights issues in the Seattle area, making those connections. But it was also important, starting 4 years ago or so, that enough Christian congregations stood up with Muslims, and then we began to tell them, you have more friends than you know.
Right.
You're not as alone as you feel. And then so we begin to see other mosques and Islamic centers begin to be more public, which then creates more opportunities for more allies, and then you just kind of create this generative cycle so that when the Sri Lankan attack happened, and the cathedral in Seattle put on a worship service, a Eucharist for the Roman Catholics who were grieving this, we had a SICK leader, we had Faith Action Network was there. I mean, we helped kind of all together, kind of try to get folk there, and then the Muslim community brought flowers and gave bouquets to as many Christians as they could. And when they did, they'd walk up and say, we are grieving with you, we stand with you.
Wow.
So it isn't just that one thing. And then that becomes what? A story that can be told. And it's true, because mm-hmm. I was there, I got the flowers, I brought them home to my wife, right? Mm-hmm. So we had them on our table. Those stories break down so much and then create the possibility for shared political power out of values, out of shared values. So it's so powerful.
Yep.
All right.
Yep. So, yeah, we're going to do the...
Sure. So, to go into a little bit more. So, we kind of just wanted to address barriers that could get in the way of folks getting engaged in public policy and advocacy. Just because we know that, you know, we don't want that to be a stopping point for folks when those barriers come up. So, we want to kind of talk about some and then talk about some potential strategies to address those. So that we can, you know, go home with some tools when those things kind of show up. So
overload. Oh my gosh.
Overload. Okay. Maybe I'll turn right now.
Yeah. I can help you. You want to help carry it out, Carrie? Can you help her pull that out?
Yeah.
So I'm just going to share. You know, I've been retired for a month. And I know.
Congratulations.
But I'm feeling mostly called right now to help with immigration issues, uh-huh. especially being located in San Diego.
Yeah.
But I'm kind of trying to figure out, you know, before I commit fully. So this is really helpful to me to hear your ideas, and I'll certainly go online and kind of see what you're doing. But
and are you part of a faith community there?
Yeah. Well, we have a pretty progressive Lutheran church.
Church,
and,
yeah. Well, so, I mean, so, so you know, I mean, maybe, and Amber, I think, I'm just going to say a bit of your story. Amber comes out of a more evangelical, you know, conservative Christian tradition. So this question of barriers for her is a big one as an organizer, like, that, you know, from her family and so forth. So, you know, you know, and as Lutherans, what, I mean, those of us who are Lutherans in the room, what have you heard over your life about, you know, why we shouldn't do advocacy? If you bring up something in church, what do you hear?
God and church and faith need to be separate.
Yeah.
Separation. I mean, church and state, excuse me, yeah. Yep.
Well, my husband's pastor, and you've got to be pastor to all people.
Right.
So.
Yep.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And we definitely have all sides in our church. So. Mm-hmm. But there's still the gospel.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Well, that could be in the other. Yeah. Okay. So, yeah. So within the church, you're going to cause division, right? I mean, that people, you know, we're going to, it's hard enough anyway. If we lose this family, you know, like, and maybe some of your big, I mean, nobody says this per se. But when you know that one of your biggest givers in church voted for Trump, like, this is like, you know.
Typically, politicizing just means you said something I don't agree with.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. So I think that there's incredible passivity in the theological framework that many Lutheran churches preach and teach.
I think so too.
Passivity.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and then, I mean, I've been told it's actively wrong. By pastors, that it's actively wrong, and so well, you really seem to believe.
You mean
in
to
works.
Speak out?
They'll say you really seem to believe in works. To which I will say, well, that's the fourth use of the law, and they'll say, I thought there were only three. I said, yeah, you just made up a fourth, which is that any response to God's love is heretical and wrong and even sinful. Right. So I'm just trying to break. I'm trying to break that through because I know they don't. They kind of don't believe it, but they. They preach passivity.
Okay.
That's how we've always done it.
Yeah, that's it.
Well, in my sense, well, I mean, maybe it's from where I sit, that there's in Lutheran circles, there's a lot of change going on related to this, of the people that are younger pastors, or I don't mean younger age, but have been to seminary more recently. Mm-hmm. I know that what seminaries teach now about the very thing that Terry's talking about, they don't teach that anymore. I mean, they you know, the what's basically that seminaries have been, you know, teaching about, you know, advocacy and social statements and stuff for a while.
And community organizing.
Right, and community organizing, mm-hmm. and that was part of our earlier discussion. But also, I mean, for those of us who are Lutherans, and this is probably true for the denomination as well, you know, advocacy is in our Constitution. I mean, people need to know. This is kind of a advocacy 101. You go out and say, well, did you know, that that part of the purpose of the church, part of the starred sections, of the ELCA model constitution for congregations and synods and churchwide has, you know, that we're called to advocacy. And in fact, as pastors, that's part of your call. So that's been true, and the ELCA has been around since 1988. So, you know, so they're remnants, though, of the old theology, but I think our denomination has been committed to advocacy since the beginning. But people,
you're saying it's getting better.
It's getting better. It's getting better.
Out.
And
okay.
but there's remnants of a theology of you keep politics and the gospel separate. which is like
another issue is distance to the Capitol to say, and I can remember.
Yeah.
They were saying, Cindy, they're not going to move the Capitol to Chicago. You're going to have to travel 3.5 hours to go down to Springfield.
And we're to Sacramento.
And it's all over. I mean, you've got this long state. It's hard. I have to tell you, being able to get to the Capitol in 20 minutes is the biggest gift of my life. I love it in Minnesota. I'm just back there for...
Yeah, it's a huge...
After 45 years. So it's... 55 years, yeah. It's wonderful.
But you can do so much in the district.
I don't know about folks here, but one thing that I've heard is like, not that we've already arrived, but people like in Washington say, we're so progressive here. We, you know, like that, like we don't, there's no work, more work to be done. So I don't know if folks have heard that, but I, you know, that's one of the barriers I see. Mm-hmm.
Feeling good about where you are and not pushing yourself forward.
What's accomplished?
What's the next hurdle?
My barrier is Duncan Hunter as my representative. Mm. But anyway,
I don't know if it is. It doesn't sound good.
All right.
Oh, he's under indictment
let's
right now.
Okay,
I'm
so
voting for him anyway.
Move so. Over to the when these things come up. Unless is there any others that folks have kind of been challenged or in that moment? All right. So what are, so I already kind of start reminding folks that we are called to advocate. Like it's actually in the ALCA constitution. I don't know how the ALCA is a constitution.
Yeah.
Like people, a lot of times folks don't even know. So like remembering, recalling, and showing that that's actually part of our mission.
Yeah, the emails from the bishop and from the advocacy office, we share those with our members. So that's really helpful.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Well, and just on that, you know, in the ELCA since, since it's actually going back to the, I think it's actually in the old green book, the hymnal, but our affirmation of baptism, which we use for, you know, every, confirmation and when adults join, et cetera, you know, and the last petition that people promised, you know, last thing of those five promises you make is, you know, strive for justice and peace in all the earth. Well, like, if that isn't about mm-hmm. advocacy, mm-hmm. what is, you know, people like that?
I've loved this week, you know, just hearing from the various traditions about really like what our traditions say is possible and what we're called to do. And I feel like sometimes we need to remind ourselves in our congregations, even at the pulpit, you know, finding ways to integrate some of this justice language or values in our services, I think, is another way to kind of address some of this. Mm-hmm. Just starting to make it a part of your congregation, reminding folks again, like, it's in the scripture, it's in our tradition that we're supposed to stand up against social injustice.
Well, and I was talking to Asa last night, we were talking a little bit, and he's a Baptist, right? You know, and so he was kind of challenging, you know, me and I think, you know, Lutherans in general, which is a challenge I'm happy to take on and be trying. But do our sermons and do our proclamation does it actually offer people a direct avenue to work on the issue you just addressed? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Or are we just saying, well, as long as we think this way? A lot of times I go to churches and people will say, well, I've never thought about Muslims that way. And I say, well, you know, I don't think your Muslim, I think your Muslim neighbor is grateful that that's true, but that doesn't really impact your Muslim neighbor very much. The question is, what have you done? What have we done? So it's about kind of a purity of thought. As long as we don't think in an impure way, like we're good to go. And so I think we need to provide more like direct direction and actually opportunities to sign up to do stuff so that when people are convicted by something they hear in a sermon, that you on-ramp them to take part right away, because the biggest issue we got going on right now is despair. And you can't answer despair with forgiveness. Yeah. You have to answer despair with a way to begin to act that doesn't Amen. Overwhelm your life.
Right.
You
know, so, right.
So. Yeah. One thing we do is our God's Work Our Hands Day. We do that in partnership with a Muslim church locally. Oh. And then so that helps us, you know, we have a meal side by side.
Yeah.
And so
great idea. I mean, one of the things we didn't put up was barrier. It's not the same as despair, but we're going to talk about this later when we come to our last little piece here. But people feel they don't feel equipped or I have heard so much, Pastor. I'm not an expert on policy. I don't know. I mean, there's a bill, and it's like, I mean, I can't read that and analyze that. I can't, you know, and even when you put out your 5 points why we should support this mm-hmm. bill, that's over my head, you know. And And the response to that is, and when we get to the sort of messaging part, is, you know, if you care about hungry kids, say, you know, and you know that there's, you know, there's a bill, breakfast after the bell, that's, you know, going to feed some hungry kids, that's all you need to know, you know, to like write a letter to your legislator about you're a member of a certain faith community, you know, your faith tradition calls you to care about hungry children, and you know there's this bill, and I really want you to support it. And you don't need to know, but people feel, and we get too wonky as policy people, and mm-hmm. people in the pews feel like, oh, it's not even that they have a theological barrier to it, that they just don't feel like they, that, I'm not one of those people that can, like, can put together an effective sentence to communicate to
them. They don't feel equipped, and I think this is a big barrier, and I think that honestly, the system tends to do that. So if you watch some of the things that happen, you can't figure out why they're happening that way. And so then you just sort of give up. But one of the other things that Isaiah has is what's called a week-long every year. And it's down in Rochester, Minnesota, around the Mayo Clinic stuff. And they take people down there. We walk through all kinds of things very carefully, almost like a Curcio, where you start at the beginning and you build up to where you really feel like you have an understanding and you're empowered as a leader.
Is your pastor Clark?
Pardon?
What's your pastor's name?
Well, Lori Eaton.
Okay.
Is the one who's been on the board, although Martha Schwen Bardwell is our associate.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay.
All right. What are some other things? I also like. We were talking a little bit about like what you can do, because this can be very big. This can definitely get in the way. Mm-hmm. And that's why I love Take Five Tables, because it makes it simple, right? Mm-hmm. It just makes it simple. You find one issue, you know, that you care about, and you know, you have coffee table. You take 5 minutes, you know, and that's making some steps towards, you know, doing something advocacy related. So I think that you know.
And in the process, you maybe find someone else who's interested, right? Because you're sitting there.
Yeah, and we all have like our different, you know, passions, you know? So, I mean, and utilize that, you know, like 1 week I might do a Take Five on something related to criminal justice. My church mom, she's very big on housing and homelessness. And so she might, so there's ways to do it to make it smaller and not feel so overwhelming. Mm-hmm.
One of the other things too that a friend taught me when she was retiring, she had been in leadership in early childhood all throughout her career, and she said, "I'm willing to do something that is time limited and task specific." So if you can mm-hmm. convince someone that this is a difference that you could make that is not going to take up months of your time or the rest of your life, and you have a clear sense as to what you can do to make that difference, it's empowering.
Yeah.
I mean, it's part of your life, but it doesn't have to take over. And sometimes people's guilt about having not, and shame about not having done something, and then it impedes them because they then imagine that they have to like do mm-hmm. everything all the time. So like, you work this into your week, you work this into your month. It's like it doesn't take over everything.
It's like managing commitment.
I think that's great. Mm-hmm. And I think the other piece is that America tends to propose that we have to fix problems. You hear politicians say this all the time. We're going to end this. Mm-hmm. Well, that often is overwhelming, too. Yeah. and then disappointing on the other end.
Can you say, I like how you phrase it, what you make it a time limit.
Manage commitment. Is that what you said?
Mm-hmm. Managing commitment.
Managing commitment.
Another way is to say making commitment scaled to what you can.
Mm-hmm. You said time limited.
That's great.
So you see a beginning and an end of it. Example that I think of that I got Patsy to do was to take a look at all of the hotels in Chicago and decide, make recommendations about where we would move our very large conference if we were to move. Mm-hmm. And she took a team, they went to the places, they brought a report, they brought it back, and she was done with it. Mm-hmm. And it provided a great service. So it, with this, the Take Five is a time-limited, task-specific, that has a hook that if you want to get more involved in this particular issue, there's a road for it. But if you want to just say, I want to support the issues that other people are supporting, you get what it is and can do it.
Another thing I'll add, and this isn't necessarily time limited, but I know for me it helps sustain my work, is really building relationships with people, especially folks who are impacted. So like I always think about prison work. Washington State, for instance, we don't have a parole, a way for long sentence, folks who are sentenced in long terms to have an opportunity for release. And, it's the connections that I've made with the guys inside who are, it's the connections I've made with the folks inside that keeps me going. It's remembering that it goes beyond a policy or a bill number. It's, it's art now. It's Brandon. It's, folks who I really care about, and I'm connected to them, and I want to definitely work for their liberation. So I think, when we have those opportunities to build relationships with folks, I think that the commitment is, it grounds you, and it definitely, kind of helps sustain the commitment, for me at least, so.
I think in the Lutheran Church, just as you brought up and Terry brought up, on one hand, younger pastors are coming on that have a commitment to advocacy and enable permission and requirement for that. But over time, there is older and older Lutherans who were acculturated in the old way, not thinking we have permission to be out there.
Right.
So there's a mission within a mission.
Right, right. And no, and I think of an example. I remember this is before FAN, but Lutheran Public Policy Office, how Paul Benz and I were meeting with the interim pastor at a church in Mount Vernon, and her council president. Well, her council president at that point happened to be someone who was had run several times for on Democratic ticket for state legislature, and Terry will know this. I'm sure it can put in the characters in this thing, but this church had never done any advocacy in its life, and didn't even talk about social issues because of some of the theological baggage, and yet there were people in the congregation that were deeply involved in party politics, in civic and community issues, in doing advocacy in their secular lives. But they, but there was this complete wall, but my God, you cannot talk about that in church. And I think that was over 10 years ago. That church, there's a particular thing there, but in any case, I don't think we're in that place with many of our churches anymore. But there certainly were plenty of churches like that in the ELCA. I'm sure you found some of them in Minnesota and Iowa and other places that, this guy said, I know exactly who the D's are in my congregation, or I know who those people are, but we never talk about it in church. And I'm not advocating that they talk about the Democratic Party in church, but that you're advocating for, breakfast after the bell, or you're advocating for more funding for mental health, in our community, but I think we're leaving that era behind. And those of you who are aware of some people in this community have been reading this, in the ELCA, this new book by Lenny Duncan, an African-American pastor in Brooklyn, newly ordained, called Dear Church. It's just published this month, and five copies are coming today that I ordered for the library if you're going to be here next week.
Okay.
We're going to put stamps on them, and people can read them. They're only 134 pages, so you could read it in not too long.
I'm about two-thirds of the way into it.
It's going to shake up. It's going to
powerful.
It really does relate to what we're talking to here, because
talking about here, because he's talking about the issue of, you know, white supremacy, but it is very much about breaking down some of these barriers, and how, you know, how the ELCA has got to really change. And anyway, dear church, Lenny Duncan.
So yeah. We have some ideas. So when these kind of are starting to come our way, remember some of these ideas to kind of confront some of those. And that was kind of what this exercise was for, just so that we have some tools in our back pocket. That, and another big one, community. You know, be in community with each other, because it is hard work, it is long work, and that's also a way to sustain the work, is to have other people that you can talk to and call, and, you know, so... Yeah.
One of the things that I'm thinking about as you've talked about this is we're very much involved with feeding. We have meals where we invite people. There are people that in the neighborhood we are, because the nature of the neighborhood, is stop in and get something at coffee hour and then leave. We put food in backpacks for the kids whose parents want to take it home at the school across the street. We're involved with the food pantry, and we have a shelter, and there we feed over there too, in groups of us, and organize the shelter feeding group. But all of those are actions, and what we're not doing is the policy action. So as we're doing some of these things that are Christian action, clearly, to think about what the policy is that go, or are, that go hand in hand with that, is a very provocative thought for me.
And I think, you know, we're going to talk about messaging soon, you know, for a lot of folks who are doing those things, like you're seeing like that, you know, you're hearing the stories, you're seeing what that's looking like, and you can, you know, talk about that when you're connecting to some of these policy issues, when you're developing messaging. One thing, like, we tried this, and maybe we'll try it again, and it's it was a little bit different than actually policy change, but for folks who are in those spaces, we wanted to do like a voter training for faith communities who have like feeding programs and shelters, so that they could connect with folks who attend. You know, a lot of times in Washington State, you know, we're really trying to make voting something that everyone has access to, but a lot of folks don't know it because, you know, that's how the system's kind of set up, to not, you know, share that information. And so we were, you know, did a training on like, how do you talk to folks who might be like, I can't vote because I don't have a home? And how do you, you know, share the information that we have that you actually can? You know, or how do you share that, you know, I have a felony, so I don't think I can vote? And being able to be like, actually in Washington State, you know, if you're not under the Department of Corrections custody, you can actually register to vote. That's empowering for people, that they know that they actually have a voice, you know. And so kind of introducing to, in some of those spaces where we are doing the feeding, where we are doing the shelters, other ways for engagement at a kind of a different level. So,
Before we leave this barriers thing, I think one of the things I need to keep reminding myself is that even though we may be in a trajectory of we really have changed and are changing, as say the ELCA, and there's more, you know, support for really taking our faith in the public square and so forth, that it's, you know, that enculturation that you talk about of not only the older generation, but that it is part of that. Some of these barriers are really part of the DNA of the church historically. Yeah. Even whether our Constitution says differently, whether our seminaries teach differently, it's part of our DNA, so that we have to keep reaching back and bringing people along and doing the 101 kind of stuff again and again. The reasons why I'm involved locally in Everett in a table of faith leaders that are working on homelessness and housing issues. And at this point, we're mainly evangelical, more conservative churches. It's been a real wonder to me because, some of the mainstream people aren't, we have some, but these are like the non-denominational churches, and it, I find it really growthful because, I mean, one African-American minister of outreach said to me when we were talking about legislative successes and advocacy, and he said, well, and he meant sincerely, like, well, how do you even do that in church? And he really wanted to know, you know, like, and so, like, I'm thinking about, gosh, could I actually design a workshop about advocacy that, you know, is informed by sort of really evangelical, biblical stuff and get some, you know, so that like, wow, wouldn't that be something if you know, some of these churches that just don't delve into that at all can start thinking about that. But we need to be continually remembering our own journey and you know, and going back to, yeah, not everybody has come down that road. And so anyway, that's, we have to do it again and again and again and again because of the DNA of our church in the ELCA. And the
DNA of our culture, which says only individuals matter. If someone is hungry, it's because they're an economic sinner and not righteous. They don't work hard. All that kind of stuff. And then you've got, you know, yeah. So there's just so much. And then politics is dirty. Mm. Right. That's the way a lot of people feel about that too. So there's,
it's not pure.
That's right. So there's like a lot of systemic things like national narratives and sort of deep assumptions about what matters and who matters. I mean, all that's there, but of course, those same narratives, some of them have in the first century.
Right.
And Jesus found ways to develop a coalition of people who didn't want to live that way anymore, and I think we can too.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And just in terms of interfaith, like remember when you're dealing with evangelicals, multi-faith peacemaking makes sense to them. Mm-hmm. Interfaith blenderizing, frappeing, you know, all of the faiths into one big blob, that is like a no-no.
Right.
But multi-faith peacemaking or work to love neighbor, like some of them can get on board with that.
That's right.
If you're going to allow them the space to be who they are.
Yep.
That's helpful.
Yep. Yeah.
All right.
Well, yeah. And I think, did people get the messaging? I'm wondering, Amber, if we want to, I think we want to go over this, but then I'm thinking maybe instead of, since we're so small, maybe instead of doing pairs, we'll just kind of, we'll try to craft a group message. Maybe we could do that. Give people a chance to because I know what we were going to do is, if you could just look at this sheet, developing effective messages, and if you don't have one, what we were going to do is go over this and then divide into pairs, and each practice a message on each other. And if people want to do that, we can still do that. But let's just look at this a bit. I think. A number of you have skills and experience in this, but it's always good to review. That when you are communicating, now we can imagine this could be a message that you're crafting to present in writing to your legislator. This could be a message that you are preparing to deliver to them when you go to visit with them in person. Just ask how many of you have participated in a meeting with your elected officials?
I invited her over for coffee.
Okay.
And she came.
Yeah, okay. All right. So okay, so this is, as we've already seen, the various ways to, you know, that you do this, but you can do it in writing, in an email, in a letter, in meeting with them. So of course, you know, always who you are and, you know, what your faith community is or what organization you're part of. What is your issue? Be prepared to describe your issue. And don't be surprised if your legislator is unfamiliar with it. They have so many plates full of everything from salmon to roads to childcare to prisons. And if it's a particular bill, like to be able to mention the bill number and the title of the bill, because and bill numbers. I'm terrible on bill numbers, and the truth is that some of our legislators are not always, you know.
Maybe also the sponsor.
The sponsor, yeah, right. The sponsor, good, Steve. That's yeah. And be prepared to discuss your issue briefly and plainly. Don't bombard them initially with the details, and you can communicate the detail in the form of written materials that you can leave behind. Why does this matter to you? And how can this change the life of someone that you know? And I think that the business of a personal story, there is no, I think, in my experience, from what I've heard from legislators, there is no more powerful tool you have than a personal story. So I'll give you an example. We are in an era where there's not very much bipartisan legislation going on, but in the past we can remember times that there was, and we hope for that more in the future. But in the state of Washington, we worked for many years to pass the DREAM Act, and that was to allow dreamers, young people who didn't have papers but had maybe been here since they were two or whatever, gone all through the public schools and were then going to college to be able to get in-state tuition, tuition rates, and definitely impacted a lot of young people in our state. So a number of those such young people were in Skagit County. And what key person was a Republican chair of the education committee, whatever, in the Senate. And it was the stories of these young people that that moved her to tears when they went and brought people down to Olympia, went and met with her. And her heart was touched, and she changed her vote. She took leadership on it in her committee. I mean, this was probably about 6 years ago or so. They got their Republican name on it. I think it was called the HOPE Act instead of the Dreamers Act. But it was passed. That's just, that is like, you just got to hang on to that account, because that, in fact, And that's how we get a lot of laws. I mean, somebody, on gun violence, this has been huge. I mean, to the degree we've had any success, which is really limited, but it's those stories that have to come out. So, stories, big deal. And then I think, as people of faith, what we've been talking about here, what are the values in my faith tradition? I mean, my faith tradition calls me to love my neighbor, and what that means is, I have to care about, what happens to them, and especially people that don't have as powerful voices as others. I mean, that is one of the things, and you were saying this, Amber, that we, unlike other lobbyists, a lot of times where it's like for an interest that is gonna have a profit from something, or it relates to their livelihood or whatever, their own personal interest. We are saying, well, we're here because of our neighbor, and our neighbor, they don't have as much power in the system, so we've got to stand in with them, and so that comes out of our faith, our faith background, and I'll tell you that there's a lot of people of faith in our state legislatures. And when you develop relationships with them, no you do this advocacy, know this, but if you haven't before, you find out. I remember I used to live in a sort of more rural area, and my state legislator, the senator, was a conservative Democrat. conservative on moral issues and on gay and lesbian stuff and or, you know, rights. And we had conversation, I would say, over, you know, I related to her about that over about 3 or 4 years. And she ended up actually being the deciding vote back when it was extending. It was Mary Mark, you know, Mary Margaret. You can't underestimate the power of a long-term relationship. And that you may, in fact, as a person of faith, find that your legislator actually wants to relate their political work to their faith. I mean, I've had this experience. It's like, because they, some of them are very serious Christians. I mean, so they care. And as a pastor, it's like, wow, you have even more. Like, so don't let go of that piece of it. And then what you want them to do, always got to close, you know, this is what I want you to do. I want you to vote for this. I want you to help push this out of committee. This bill is languishing in committee. You know, that's the thing, for example, if you get an e-alert, you'll hear maybe from the office, hey, we got to get this thing out of committee because there's a timeline and you know, I want, you're on that committee, want you to push it out, you know, I want you to vote for it. I want you to, and then are you going to do that? So messaging, do you want it? I mean, you know, we could end a little early too. What we had planned was, and you guys gotta go. We had thought about, you know, working individually on messages and then practicing them with each other. But another thing we could do, if there are a couple brave people here, is we could ask a couple of you to pretend you're talking to your legislator. You've gone in, you've made an appointment about an issue, and say what you were going to say. Can we do that?
I'd love to watch that.
I've done it enough. I'm willing to do it.
Is that okay with you, Amber? Yeah. Okay. So, Amber, you're gonna be the legislator. How about that?
Okay.
And Cynthia, what issue do you want to do?
Well, something we've been talking about for 55 years, and it is the importance of spending money on early education.
Okay, so let's not start. Okay, so all right, we're going to start.
Very beginning.
Okay, you're gonna go in to your to her office.
Okay, you're gonna be Hodan Hassan. How's that?
Thanks for meeting with me.
Hi, Hodan. I'm just delighted that you've been elected, and congratulations on your being elected into leadership. As a freshman senator, I'm excited. It's fun having you living right in the neighborhood, and I'm looking forward to your forming a relationship with our church so that we can work together on issues that are important to both of us.
All right. So are you a constituent of mine?
I am. I'm in District 63, and I'd love to have you come over and have coffee, and we could talk a little bit more about some things periodically.
What's your name?
My name is Cynthia Devereaux. I live right across the street in City Homes on Park, and delighted to get to know you.
So what are some of the issues that, you know, are most concerning to
you? Well, I'm a part of an organization called ISAIAH in the state of Minnesota, and we are interested in lots of peace and justice issues. But my particular issue comes from working with young children and their families for over 55 years. And so what I want to talk to you about particularly is Bill number 473 that is talking about fully funding early childhood education through child care.
Okay. I know that one.
Yeah, and okay. I think you're a co-sponsor on the bill, as I recall, and if not, I would like you to be a co-sponsor. I know that Representative Smith is the lead sponsor on the bill. But the reason that it's important, and I think it's important also to be able to state this to your to the Republicans in the House, is this is not just an issue of what's important for education and support for families where parents are working, but it's an economic issue. And the economic issue is very simple. The research that has been shown over a period of now over 40 years, starting with a study in Michigan, the High Scope study, is that if we don't pay for it now, we are likely to pay $17 for every dollar we don't spend later. It is expensive to do remediation. The research has shown that people who have had good, strong early childhood programs are less likely to be teen parents. They are more likely to finish high school. They are more likely to go on to higher education. They are less likely to be drug users. And many, many more things that are supported not as strongly as the ones I've mentioned. But if you stop to think, fewer in special education. So if you stop to think about that and think about the cost of, let's just say, special education and how hard it is to find that, it's really, really important to spend the dollars now. And it makes a better life for children and their families.
Well, thank you. I will definitely remind me of the number again.
473.
Okay.
I think I said that. I don't know.
Okay. We're not going to check it.
Okay. We're not going to check it. So.
Okay. Are you?
I was just going to look. So I would like you to consider co-sponsoring the bill, and to give that messaging to in your conversations with people who are more conservative and say we can't afford. The other thing that I think is important to remember that Isaiah talks about all the time, and it's fairly clear, is that we're not really operating from a position of scarcity. There is enough money. It depends on how we choose to use it, and we need to use it in the ways that are most important, in my opinion, to children and families, because it strengthens us all.
Thanks. Woo! All right. Okay.
Okay.
Yeah,
it actually wasn't as good as it could have been, and I would have studied more. But this is the talk I came when they were in district.
Well, and she had to ask you your name and where you know.
I started out with all of that, and I said to both of them, because I'd been in their offices, it's really good to see both of you again. Thank you for being here. So I was passing that on to.
So does anybody else want to do one?
Do you want to be the legislator this time?
or I'll be the advocate. Either way, anybody else?
Well,
yeah.
In this discussion, was it brought up that I'm one of your constituents?
Yes.
That was the first thing I said.
Yeah. And I think it would be interesting to have one to a more conservative legislator. Mm-hmm.
You want to meet your own person. No one wants to meet someone who's not one of the constituents, right?
If you're informing them and giving them information they didn't have on an issue before, that may be the one time where it's.
This is one of my goals, is to get more folks who are part of faith communities, not just faith leaders, to do testimony, because that's actually a cool way to actually talk to a number of different legislatures, and you're not necessarily in their district, but you're giving information on a particular bill that you're passionate about, and they're all happy to listen to it. So I think that's something I would love to, as people start to learn and, figure this messaging piece out, getting folks up to Olympia to testify.
So what is that?
So testifying, during the bill process, bills will tend to come up for a hearing in a committee. And what we do is, there are different folks who will speak either on behalf or opposition to the bill, and they're able to essentially do what we just did here, but to the entire folks who sit on that committee.
So there's probably a place where there's an invitation, or?
No, you can actually, you sign up, and at least in our state.
Well, you need to know when the
You sign up in our state.
You go on the website and that's where, like in our state, Faith Action Network would say, there's going to be hearing next week on this issue. And we also didn't say, we have some sub
groups, like we have an economic justice working group part of FAN, so they might say, if you're on their list, you know, there's this hearing coming, we need people to come, yeah. And then you go down and you sign up outside the hearing, and
you got like 2 minutes or something, or
how many people are signed up, you might have, and they usually like have a little, at least here they have a little like a light system that'll show you, you know, when you have 30 seconds left. And you can also leave written testimony with them. Mm-hmm. So if you don't finish, or you know, just so that they have on hand.
I think that's always a good idea too. Yeah. The other thing that we do with Isaiah is they put out a call for fill the room.
Yeah.
And so if you're not testifying, you are filling the hearing room with people. And we often have standing room only, which is really cool.
That happens sometimes. Like, I mean, there was, big turnout. I know some, Johanna was saying she was testifying, Rabbi Johanna, at a day when the anti-vaxxers were in Olympia, the anti-vaccination people. Man, they filled the room. But I want to give another example. The hearings thing, I'm really glad you brought that up, Amber. Amber, I'm sorry, I'm getting tired here. But sometimes you'll meet, one-on-one with somebody. Other times you'll meet, like, an advocacy day. We often will have, like, you might have 7 or 8 people from your district, maybe more. And then when we have advocacy day, when this happens at, various advocacy days, but you'll usually have a short planning session with people from your district. And then you'll say, okay, we're going to have, and we do this even for the meetings that we have back in our district too. We'll have a planning meeting before, and everybody come 45 minutes early. Then we look at, okay, the intersection of what issues are most important to people in our group. What is, the legislative agenda we have as Faith Action Network? What committees are our people on that we're meeting with? And then we'll pick, we'll say, okay, and we'll do a sort of rapid fire thing. We'll have, Cynthia, you're going to talk about, early childhood education in that bill. And so, you're going to have like 30 seconds to say, my name is, I'm so-and-so, and I'm, well, maybe we'll have gone around already and said who we are, what faith community we're part of. And then, in a couple sentences, you'll say, this bill because dot, dot, dot. And then maybe you can cover 4, And I mean, if you get, during a session, you probably aren't going to get more than 10, 15 minutes. But if you meet off session with people, you may get as much as an hour. I mean, or people that will just sit with you for as long as you want to talk. But still, to be organized, to have specific bills, and to ask, like in the interim, what is a priority for you as you look toward the next session? What bills are you going to be bringing forward? What can we do to help with that? And this longer term relationship thing really comes into play.
You brought up an important point about the legislator might ask, can you send me some requests, send me some affirmations so that I can use those.
Right.
When I have to go on this bill.
Yep. Yes. No. And yeah. And the stories. That's where. Yeah. That really, really helps them. And we shouldn't. Yeah. We shouldn't underestimate. Especially. I mean, California is very big. And my guess is, it's a little easier to work on the state level here in Washington than it probably is in California.
Probably in Minnesota too.
But still, citizen advocates are still really important. I mean,
we did recently have a Lutheran Advocacy Day. I don't know if it's in her faith, but I just know because my husband was one of a team of 3 that was invited to go up to Sacramento, and they had the meeting in the morning, and then he got really sick. So there is such a thing, which I'll certainly look into more, but that's kind of a new awareness to me. So.
One of the things for us in the that are Lutherans is that it's interesting. Our public policy work as the ELCA and before that the predecessor bodies is you know, really, I mean, when I really was very just focused on the legislative, you know, on sort of lobbying, and I can tell you that, I mean, I became chair of the Lutheran Public Policy Office of Washington State like in 1997 or 98, and back then, we didn't do organizing of really, it was mainly like just Olympia stuff, and it was you know, it was like the church lobbyists, and you know, you maybe had a newsletter or something, but that's totally, you know, so that there's still some of that kind of background in some of the Lutheran public policy offices. Mainly, they work in the state capitol. They give testimony. They're the church's voice in, you know, in the halls of power. Where the community organizing model is coming from a whole different, you know, direction. And now, in a way, in Isaiah, and hearing your story about Minnesota. That we're still very much a public policy. We have the DNA of the old LPPO in some ways, and we have some, you know, new DNA about community organizing. And we're still kind of we're still in process on that, aren't we? I mean, you know, and we're very much so. I mean, this is an issue. So because they don't know, there's different priorities if you have one model as compared to another model. But that's something to be aware of, because, you know, as you start to meld the community organizing along with the legislative stuff, then you have more power, right? Yeah. And So anyway, we're...
Thank you.
Yeah.
Lenny Duncan went and talked to Bishop Eaton and has had conversations with her to get her support on some of the issues that he wants in his book. So that's an interesting, nice. Interesting piece.
I think we're supposed to go to 12:30, but I think this is fine to end now. Yeah.
Again, we have some other documents. Not everyone's from Washington, but I mean, if you just want to see like what a reminder of what's possible, there's our success and some business cards. Yeah.
Is that available on the website? Some of that stuff?
Some of it is, yeah.
Okay.
We also have some census. Okay, so we didn't talk about the census, but that's something that is going to be impacting all of us. So just like we've encouraged like different faith communities to put up these census posters in their congregations, and your states might actually have folks who are working on it as well.
Is that still an uncertain thing?
I would say there's still definitely things that can be worked out a bit more, but we're still, the goal for us is like to make sure that everyone is counted, and that communities that are often undercounted are still counted. And so, and that's going to, because of all the messaging, it's going to take, you know, people of faith and people in the community to say, like, you don't have to be afraid, you know, this is what's going on, and giving that more information about that. So,
I heard the pre-run that they do. Uh-huh. That has the citizen question on it, so.
And you know, there's, and pay attention, find those folks in your states, because like I know, like in Washington, if that were the situation, there's this effort to just not answer the question, anybody not to answer it.
Okay.
So I mean, there's that's definitely organizing that's going around on how to address some of the challenges. But feel free to kind of take what we've been doing.
Consider volunteering for the census.
Yeah.
If you have time.
And so if I were to look up Isaiah in Minnesota, that would probably get me there.
It's Isaiah, I think it's isaiahminnesota.org.
And it's spelled like Isaah.
Isaiah.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Just like Isaiah.
Yeah, and let me give you a card. If I can be helpful to you in any way.
I am in. I like your name because I'm Cindy too. So.
Yes.
We have
so
to,
I'll
we
remember
have to,
that.
We have to hang together. Yeah, I'm on our steering committee from our church, and I'm newer to it, but I did go to Week Long last year.
I mean, it's just trying to figure out how ideas are.
I'm happy to work pretty hard as long as it's useful. You know?
As long as you're also seeing some sort of results from this.
Yeah. Well, thank you all for coming.